We're holding on top of Mem Aleph, Aleph, the new Mishnah.
Right.
We were learning about, we've been learning this whole perek about the payments that the onus or mafata makes, and throughout the perek we've been calling it a knas. Now, one of the rules of knas, which is what we're going to be discussing in the Mishnah and in the Gemara that follows, is that you only pay a knas when anything that's defined as a knas in halacha, you only pay if there's edim that come and say that you owe it. Not if you admit it yourself in Beis Din. It's called Moedib Knas Potter. So the Mishnah says, however, Petitius Bnei Shoplaini, that's Bite Shoplaini, if somebody says, I was Mefata, I seduced so and so's daughter, because the Knas he doesn't pay on his own because he's Moedib Knas. But Mashalim Boshis Gam Apiatma, so he pays the Boshis and Gam, the Boshis and the Nezek, which we said before that the Mefata has to pay as well, those he pays based on his own admission. Because those are not a knas, those are mamon. Those are the pagam is certainly mamon. She's worth less, so to speak. You were talking about mafata. So the Gemara is going to talk about why the Mishnah didn't mention onus. But what by mafata, there's still this boshes, there's the embarrassment, and there's the pagam, the fact that she because there's pagam, the fact that before she was a basula and now she's a baula, and they're. She was masking, but even so, there's still boshes. There's still an embarrassment, as the Gemara was going to say, not just to herself, to her family. So there still is a boshes in the fact that she may have agreed to it, but first the guy talked her into it. So for knas you need edim, but for boshes and pagam we're saying no. What? No, well, again, we have the same machlokas as before, where a mayor holds the whole thing only applies to a naira, and the chum holds it applies to a ktana as well. So in a way, the pagam is greater.
Okay.
And the truth is, it's actually not so simple. This that we're saying that boshes and pagam are not considered a knas. The truth is, there's a huge discussion over the fact that the Rambam in Hilchos Chayav L'Mazik says that a base that unless you have a base in smuchin, you can't collect those things nowadays either. Because on the face of it, because they're knas. So what are we saying over here that they're not? So they talk about various mafarshim, talk about the possibilities that maybe technically they are mamon, but a basin that doesn't have smicha can only deal with common things, whereas boshes and pagam are less common, and therefore even if they're considered mamon, then a basin that's not smuchim can't deal with them. Or maybe there's the idea, or maybe there's also the idea we mentioned yesterday, how exactly we figure the pagam. For example, we said that we imagine as if she's being sold in the marketplace and figure out how much less she's worth as a ba'ula. Well, that's not a normal thing. It's not a real hezek that happened to her, because after all, in reality, she isn't going to be sold as a slave woman. So there's various arguments why our Mishnah is considering it mamon, that he should have to pay on his own, but yet, on the other hand, you don't necessarily, your based in nowadays, wouldn't necessarily be able to handle these kinds of things. Ve'en mishalem knas, but he doesn't pay the knas, because again, moedib knas potter. Rashi says, because the Gemara explains in Baba Kama, that we learn, where do we know this? The Pasuk says about knas, the Pasuk talks about a shomer, who claims that the object that he was guarding has been stolen, and he goes and swears in Beis Din, and then turns out that he was lying, he himself took it. So the Pasuk says, Asher Yashir Alekim, whoever the Dayonim, the one with the Dayonim declare guilty, Alekim means the Dayonim, Yishalab Shnaim L'Reim, pays double. Paying double the knas. And Asher Yashir Alekim, only if the Dayonim declare him guilty based on the Edim, as opposed to if he declares himself guilty by saying, I'm guilty of stealing it. Same idea over here. Similarly, if somebody says, I stole an animal, then he pays the keren, the actual value of the thing he stole, based on his own admission. But he doesn't pay the double or the four or five-fold penalty, because all of that is a knas. And one thing is, the Rashash talks about the idea. Let's say that he himself admits I stole the animal. Edim come and say that he shechted it. On the face of it, why don't we make him pay based on the edim, the extra amounts for shechting it? Because once he's not paying the kafel because he himself admitted he stole, as we learned the other day, the Torah specifically says you pay four or five. Four if it's a sheep, five if it's an ox. There's no case where you pay three or four. Three for a sheep, four for an ox. If he's saying that I have to pay the, if he himself is saying I stole, implying therefore you get out of paying the kefil, he only pays the keren, you can't have Adim on top of that and make him pay the extra amount for shefting it.
But if the Adim comes first.
If Adim come first, that's different. We're talking about here where he comes to Beit Din first, yeah. Another case, Hamis Shodius Plony, suppose that the guy comes to Beit Din and says, my ox killed somebody, which in that case that makes him chayev to pay, as the Gemara was, we'll talk about the Gemara, it makes him chayev to pay koifer. He has to pay a certain amount for the fact that the other person was killed. We'll talk about it in the Gemara. Which is also considered a knas. Actually, we'll talk about in the Gemara whether it's a knas or not, we'll get to that. Or he says my ox killed somebody else's ox, where then he has to pay half nezek, half damages. Also, Hamis Shodius Plani, Hareza Mishalam Apiatma, then he does pay on his own. Because in the case where the ox killed somebody and killed another person, he has to pay kofer. Now, the kofer, as we'll talk about in the Gemara, there's a machloikas in Bava Kamma, is the kofer considered, the kofer, where he's paying, basically, kofer, like a ransom for his own life. Like, by rights, he should be chayav misa b'nei shemayim, we talked about the other day. Instead, he's paying money. Is that basically considered mamon, that he's, basically, it's a monetary payment? Or is it knas? Is it a fine that we make him pay, over and above what he should really by rights have to pay? If it's a fine, then he shouldn't pay out the atzmai. Our Mishnah evidently holds that it's mammon. It's like any other mammon, therefore he should have to pay it on his own admission. And the Hamis Shrodius, at Shrodish or Pliny, if he says that my ox killed somebody else's ox, we'll talk about in the Gemara what we're talking about over here, whether we're talking about a tam who pays half damages or a mu'ad who pays full damages. We'll get to that. On the other hand, if he says Hamis Shrodi Abdish or Pliny, but if he says my ox killed so-and-so's Eved, then he does not pay on his own because of his own admission, because in the case of an Eved, it's a knas. The Torah says a fixed amount, 30 shkolim, as we talked about yesterday, no matter what the actual value of the slave is, and that's the definition of a knas. Zakhlal, here's the general rule, call him a shalom yeso amashahizik, anybody who pays more than the amount that he actually caused the damage, and he doesn't pay, what? Less we'll talk about in the Gemara. On Amud Beis. Wait. Let him ask. 30 shkolim could be more or less. The general rule is a knas is anything where either the Torah gives a fixed value, like in this case, the 30 for an Eved, the 50 for a Naira, for Pitri or Oinus or whatever, or where the Torah, or where it's more. Or with more, like kefil or above a chamish or whatever. Whether in the case where it's less, that we'll talk about in the Gemara on Amud Beis, whether that's a knas or not. We'll get to that. But the call so far is anybody who pays more than the hezek, then it's considered enim shalom apiyatme. He doesn't pay on his own admission because that would be a knas. And you don't pay a knas on your own admission because, again, I'll show you another kid, the dayanim have to declare him guilty. By the way, the Shittim Kubetzis points out, when we say over here, Hamis Shodius Plini, it would actually have to be, it's not so much that the person is admitting that his shur killed somebody else, it would actually have to be that he admits in Beit Din, I owe the kofer. Why? Because otherwise, if he just goes to Beit Din and admits, you know what, my shur killed this guy, he still could be claiming I'm potter from kofer. Why? Because he could be claiming, you know what happened, that guy walked onto my property and my shur gored him. Which in that case, the Gemara discusses in Bava Kamma, he wouldn't be chayiv, the kofer. He wouldn't be chayiv any penalty for it because the guy had no business coming onto his property. So when we say in our mission over here, Hamis Shodius Plani, what we really mean is that he comes to Beit Din and says that my ox killed this guy in pub in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim or in his property or whatever it was, and I actually owe the kofer. Which then we're saying that he pays that off the atma. Yeah. So that's the Shittim Kubetzis explains the implication. Why does he have to say I'm chayav kofer? Because otherwise he could be saying yes, my ox killed the guy, but in fact I'm potter from kofer. Yeah. So the first question the Gemara asks: Velisni or nasti? Why does the Mishnah specifically mention pitisi, that I was mefata, the girl? Why didn't the Mishnah say or nasti? The case where I was my answer. Which not?
I have another question. Why did they beat the plane and not explain?
Because normally we said before, and we'll learn in the next paragraph, that the payments go to the father. So it's more relevant for him to say in Beit Din that she's so-and-so's daughter, meaning, and therefore I should owe him the money, except because it's the motive of knas, then he's not chayiv in the knas, but he's chayiv in the other penalties.
Normally, they would marry them off, yeah? would more than leave this money go to the father?
Because we said yesterday, because the father has the right to marry his daughter off when she's a katana or a naira. We learned yesterday, actually, kol shvach na'urim la'avino. We have to be two or three different sukkim that show the idea that a father has monetary rights over his daughter as long as she's a katana or a naira. And it includes this, yeah. So, the listen to Onasti. So why doesn't the Mishnah mention Onasti? So Tosfos explains the point of the question is that you let the Mishnah only say Onasti rather than PTC, and that would be a bigger chiddush. He's not only admitting that he owes the money, he's admitting in Beis Din, he's effectively declaring himself a Rasha, that I did a very pritzistic thing, and yet we're saying that he's potter from the Knas. Other Mepharshim say that the point of the Gemara's question is it should have said both, PTC or Onasti. Anyway, the answer is Loy Mebaya Karmar. The Mishnah is telling us something needless to say. Loy Mebaya Onasti, the like a pogim law. Needless to say, if he says Onasti, where then it's not such a pogam on her, he's not casting aspersions on her, he's not saying that she's a promiscuous girl. And Dimashalim Boshas Pagam Apiyasmoy. Then we say, okay, he's potter from the class, but he still has to pay Boshas Pagam. Abel PTC, but if he comes to Beis Din and says, I seduced her, the Kapogim law, which then, what is the effect of that is that he's casting aspersions on her. He's making her look bad in court, in Beis Din. Eim Eloi Mashalim Apiyasmoy, maybe he shouldn't pay anything. Maybe we would say that's why there's more of a program, but we're saying maybe we shouldn't believe him to come to Beis Din and make it an official part of the court record that now that she was promiscuous, that she sleeps around, maybe we shouldn't do that. Maybe we should just tell him, go away, we don't want to listen to you. Yeah. So we would say, therefore, fine. You owe something. You owe this. You don't owe that. But you don't owe the knas because you're Mashiach Atma. Yeah. Yeah. Eim Eloi Mashalim Apiyatma. So you'd think in that case he doesn't pay on his own admission. Kamash Malon. That's what the Mishnah is telling us. And the Gemara points out, Masnisin Deloi Tihai Tana. In fact, our Mishnah does not go according to the following Tana. The Tanya, Rav Shimon Yehuda, Oimer Meshum Rav Shimon, Ach Boshes of Gam, Enim Shalom Api Atzma. In fact, if he says PTC, he doesn't pay Boshes of Gam based on his own admission. Because, Loi Kol Hemen, Shiyiv Kim Bidish Oplaini. We kaka don't believe him to go and just and unilaterally say, cast aspersions on so-and-so's daughter and say that she's promiscuous. According to Rav Shimon, so that's what we're saying. When the Mishnah says PTC is below Shoplaini, is Vita Shoplaini, and he has to pay versus Gam, that's what we're saying, that even though it's casting aspersions on her, we still believe him. Rav Shimon Ben Yehuda would say that no. That we'd say that's a difference between, that's another difference he would say between Onus and Rafata. Onus, since he's not casting aspersions on her, he's the one who forced her into it. By his own statement, then for sure he pays versus Gam, but if it was Pitui, then not.
According to Rav Shimon, you should pay the
According to Rav Shimon, you would never pay the knach off Yatma. Everybody agrees to that.
So
no, but the difference is, if he would say that there's a difference between onus and mafata. Onus, you don't pay the knach, but you pay the boshes of gam and the tsar.
Right.
Whereas in the case of mafata, you wouldn't pay anything. Because
we don't believe it.
It's not so much that we don't believe it. Moedib Knas is a separate thing, right? We're saying, but even as far as the Boshas and Pagam, and Tsar, and even in the case of Boshas and Pagam, it's not a matter of Knas, those are Mammon, but we're not believing him yet. So who says that? He's coming to Beis Din and telling us that so and so, this girl is promiscuous, she sleeps around, why should we believe him? That's what Shimon is saying, yeah.
No, that's
yeah. That's what the Gemara is going to discuss now. Omelet Papalabaya. Nichala Lidijamai. What happens if she does want the money? What happens if she says, you know what? Fine, I'll take the lies. Let people talk about me behind my back. At least I'll get some money out of it. Do we make them pay? Well, first we're talking about her. Wait. The answer is Jumala Nichala Lavia. Fine, but maybe her father doesn't want. Maybe her father doesn't want to have the lies on his family. How about the other way around? Nichalei lo v'yamai, what if her father wants? Dumala nichalu l'vnei mishpacha. Okay, but maybe she and her father agree to take the lies, but maybe the rest of the family doesn't. They don't want that people are going to be talking about them.
And you said yesterday that if they don't want...
No, we didn't say anything before about the family. So far, the
family...
Ah, so one, let's finish the line, and then I'll tell you what the Ra'ah says about this. The rest of the mishpacha, the cousins, the uncles, whatever. Nichalul of Nemeshbacha, I knew what happens if the family also is agreeing. You know what? Fort, okay, you know what? So people will be talking about us on Facebook or whatever. Okay, but at least, you know, some money out of it. That's important stuff. The answer is still, inevitably, there's going to be some member of the family, maybe even Mirjana Sayam, who doesn't agree to that. Who would say we don't want the pgam?
Even from Medina Sayyam, they have a part of stuff.
So there are talks about. So what does this mean? I mean, the fact of the matter is, the money goes to the father, or if the father's not in the picture, as we talked about the other day, then it goes to the girl herself. How on earth does the rest of the family, who has no financial stake in this, how do they have any right to? Yeah. So the Ra'ah says like this. The Ra'ah of Aaron Alevi, one of the Rishonim, says like this. We don't mean over here that if the family objects, the guy won't pay. Period. If the guy is agreeable to paying the boshes and gam, then fine. You know, so what? He comes to Beis Din. He says, I was mafata this and this girl, so and so's daughter. I want to do tshuva. I'm willing to pay for it.
Even if
the rest of the family objects, okay, but you take it from him. All we're saying is the rest of the family, their objection causes, if he doesn't want to pay, that basically can't force him to.
So the rest of the family is as powerful as the father, basically.
Well, we're saying that in that
father
sense.
Father wants to and the family doesn't want to.
Well, we said the other way around also. If the girl herself doesn't want to, et cetera, yeah.
If the girl wants, the father doesn't.
Yeah, right. Then right.
Sorry, the father wants, the girl wants, the father doesn't.
Right. Then they have veto power. And again, according to the law, it's not veto power. It's veto power in the sense that if based in at that point, therefore can't force him to pay. So it comes out basically because of this Medina Sayyam business. It comes out the only way he's going to pay is if he agrees to the mafate. There would be a difference between mafata and onus in that case. So yeah. Now the Mishnah continued. That if somebody says I stole, then he pays the keren, but not the tashlum rabav hamisha. And then the Mishnah continued with the case of if somebody admits that my shur killed somebody else or killed somebody else's shur. The rest of the Gemara over here, from here to the end of the perek, we're basically going to be sort of jumping ahead a year and a half to Bava Kamma. This sugya that we have here is repeated almost word for word in Bava Kamma in connection with a Mishnah over there. Yeah. Itmar. The Amoraim had a discussion as follows. Palga Nizga. Now we know when a person's shur kills somebody else's shur or other animal or whatever, causes damage. Then you let me clarify that causes damage in an unusual way. The point of that we know that there's several different kinds of damage that a shur can do. There's keren where it gores. There's a shein where it eats. Where it eats. There's regal where it tramples things. Shein and regal are considered normal kinds of hezek. So shein and regal are considered normal kinds of hezek. Those are the kinds of things you make the person pay the whole thing right off the bat. Whether it was the first time or the tenth time or whatever, it doesn't make a difference. He should know that animals naturally eat, animals naturally trample things. He has to be careful of that. Keren is considered, an animal goring, is not considered such a normal thing. It's sort of unexpected, as the Gemara is going to discuss over here. So therefore, the din is the first few times, two or three times, machloikus in Bava Kamma, he only has to pay half the damages, chati nezek. And as we're going to talk about soon in the Gemara, first of all, he only pays half damages. Second of all, he only pays up to the value of his actual ox that did the damage. Suppose the Gemara talks about in Bava Kamma, not the actual value of the damage, meaning the Gemara goes into details, and in Bava Kamma, Rashi explains it briefly in the Psukim, in Parshas Mishpatim, the ox that caused the damage is worth $100, the dead ox is worth $1,000, and you'd have to pay Chatzi Nezek, which is $500, you don't. The maximum you'll pay is $100 then, because that's all your ox is worth. As opposed to if it was the third or fourth, whatever time, and the ox is called Muad, you were warned, you know already this ox is dangerous, it's wild, you're supposed to take better care of it. At that point, you become higher for Nezek Shalim, for full damages, and there, it's full damages, even if your ox itself isn't worth enough, then you're going to have to go into your bank account and take out more money. So when we say that the first two or three times you chayev chasi nezek, half the nezek, what is that? Rapapa ama palga nizka mamoina. So Rapapa says that half damages is considered mamoin. It's considered a regular monetary payment in the sense as opposed to knas, which would mean, for example, that a Beis Din without smicha can handle it. it would mean that if he admits to it, he still has to pay it. Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua Amar Pagan Nizka Knasa. Whereas Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua says that no, this half damages that you're paying in those first two or three times is considered a knas. What's the point? Rav Papa Amar Pagan Nizka Mamona, because he says Kasavar Sam Shvarim Lav Ches Kshumu Kaimi. Most oxen are not considered guarded. In other words, yes, it's true that Keren is considered, yes, it's considered that, yes, Keren goring is not considered a normal kind of damage, but the fact of the matter is, the average ox is something that, if it's not guarded, is somewhat likely to do this kind of thing. So you should be careful in the first place. Ubedinu de Mishalim Bully. So by rights, even the first time, you should have to pay full damages. But the Torah has Rachmanus on him. Because the fact is, the ox, he hasn't been officially warned that this ox is dangerous. So therefore, we give him a break. So instead of making him pay the full damages, we allow him to pay half. But it's still mammon. It's still a regular payment for damages, and as opposed to knas. No, this half nezek is really a knas. Because he figures the other way. Most oxen are considered guarded. The average ox is not going to go and gore without getting excited or whatever. So normally a person should not expect that his ox is going to do such damage at all. So really, by right, the first couple of times you shouldn't make him pay at all because it was totally unexpected. According to this logic, on the contrary, the Torah gives him a knas, the Torah fines him. By rights, he should be exempt, but the Torah is fining him by making him pay half. That way he has an incentive to watch over his ox and prevent it from goring. So, given this machloikis, we have to figure out, we'll see how various mishnayos and braisos fit with one or the other of these ideas. Simen hezek ma behemis klal. These are the catchwords, keywords of the next four Mishnayos and Braises that the Gemara is going to be quoting in this connection. Number one, Tnan. We learn in a Mishnah in Baba Kama, and in fact, I think it's the Shittim Kubetas points out the structure of our Gemara over here. Since our Gemara is basically borrowed from that Gemara in Baba Kama, therefore it starts with the Mishnah in Baba Kama rather than with our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is going to end up being the fourth one that we bring to bear on this question, rather than the first, because essentially this is a copy of the Gemara from there. So, Tnan, we learn in the Mishnah in Baba Kama, Hanizak v'hamazik teshlumin. Both the Nizak, the one who his ox was damaged, was killed, and the Mazik, the one who caused the damage, are both the teshlumin. They both so to speak, chip in towards the payment. So what does that mean? Bishlam Lamanda Amar Pagan Nizka Mamoina. If we say that the half damages is Mamoina, in other words, by rights he should have had to pay the whole damage, the whole 500 or whatever, and instead he's only paying half of it, Haina Deshayach Nizik Tashlumin. Well, then we understand what the Nizik is sort of chipping in. We're saying by rights he should have had to pay 1,000, instead he's paying 500, means that the Nizik is sort of chipping in, absorbing the other 500 by not getting paid. But according to Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua, if it's a knas, what do you mean? Really, the nizik is getting something that by legal right shouldn't even belong to him at all. Because we said, according to his logic, the nizik these first two or three times shouldn't be entitled to anything, just the Torah is giving a knas. But the shlumin is safe. What do you mean he's chipping in towards the payment? The answer is, lo'nitzracha el l'pchas nevela. You're right. But according to Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua, what do we mean that the nizik chips in towards the payment? It means the pas nevela. It means the loss in value of the dead animal. Meaning, let's say, for example, the animal when it was alive was worth 1,000. It was killed. Now the dead body, it can be sold as dog food or what have you, is worth 100. Meanwhile, by the time he gets around to selling it, it's already started decaying a little bit, and by the time he gets around to selling it, it's only worth $75. He has to absorb that $25 loss. We don't make the mazik pay for that, because the way it works with chasi nezek, by the way, let's add this detail. The way it works with chasi nezek is, we say in this case the animal was worth 100 alive and 1,000 alive, 100 dead, meaning that there was a loss of 900. What we do is we're saying that the mazik owes 450. We say we look at the value of the dead animal, and then he adds to that. So in this case, he has to pay. He, he, He has to pay the difference minus the value of the animal. So in this case, he would have to pay an extra 350.
Difference with it, together with the.
Sorry, an extra 400. That's right. So altogether, he's paying 500. Out of that 500, 100 is the value of the actual dead animal, the hamesi yaloi, the pasuk says, the dead animal goes to the original owner. And he adds on top of that another 400 to bring it up to 500 total that he's paying out of 1,000 if the animal was worth when it's alive. But again, now if the animal by this time has decomposed and it's only worth $75, he's still only adding another 400. The nizik, therefore, is only getting 475 now, 75 for selling the dead animal and 400 that he gets paid by the mazik. He's losing $25. That's what we mean that the nizik participates in the teshlumin by the mazik not having to make up the difference in value of the animal from when it was killed until when it was sold. Question is pchas nevela tanena. We don't need a mishnah to tell us that mishnah that says that the nizik participates in the teshlumin to teach us that tanena. We have another mishnah in Bava Kamma that says that teshlumin nizik. The Mishnah in Bava Kamma says that if a person causes damage, he pays tashlume nezek, payment for the damages. And the Gemara discusses over there that the tashlume nezek teaches us tashlume literally means completion. So it means you take the nezek, you take the damaged animal, and you complete, you add on top of that until you reach the half value. So we see from that already that you're looking at the value of the animal when it was killed and adding on top of that the extra $400.
We're talking about the value that went decreased after the animal was killed.
That's what we're saying. In other words, we're saying when we say Tashlume Nezek means that the Nizek's job, the guy whose ox was killed, his job, as soon as he finds out what happened, is to take the dead animal and sell it for as much as he can get right on the spot. If he decides to save it and try to bargain with people or whatever, and meanwhile it goes down to 75, then it's his loss. So we see that already from that mishnah, tashlumei nezek.
Only the nezek, not the depreciation.
Right. Malamed shabaylam taplin minevela. The Gemara explains there from a braisa that we see from that the owners have the job of taking care of the nevela and making sure it gets sold. So we already have a Mishnah saying that. What would we need another Mishnah that says that the Nizik participates in the Tashlumin? We shouldn't need. The answer is we do. Chodah b'tam v'chodah b'mu'ad. One Mishnah would be talking about the case of a tam. As again, the first two or three times, we're only paying half damages. The other is where it's a mu'ad. Because the same basic rule applies to a mu'ad as well. With a mu'ad, same idea. You have the animal alive was worth 1,000. Dead, it's worth 100. Same idea. The dead animal is worth 100. You, the mazik, have to pay an extra 900. Again, if the animal depreciates and the owner is only able to sell it for 75, you're still only paying 900, and the guy is still eating the $25.
What?
But that's the point. In other words, we need two mishnayos to tell us that. One teaches us that this rule about the depreciation, about the nizik having to eat the value, the loss, the depreciation, applies if the attacking animal were the tam, and another one if it was a mu'ad. Well, tricha, and we need both mishnayos. De'iyash me'in and tam. Otherwise, if we only had one, we would have thought it doesn't apply to the other. De'iyash me'in and tam, because if we were only told that this rule applies in the case of a tam, you would say, mishav da'kati lo yayid. Fine, we give the mazik a break, because after all, he didn't know yet that this ox is dangerous, so therefore we should give him a break. Have a mu'ad di'yayid, but if mu'ad, he already knows the animal is dangerous, maybe we shouldn't give him that break. We should make him responsible for the depreciation as well. The yeshmin and mu'ad, conversely, if we were only told in the case of the mu'ad, you would say mishum b'kama shalom kulad, because the fact is you're already being machmer, and you're making him pay the value of the whole animal, so yeah, therefore give him a break and don't make him pay for the fact that the guy let it sit there for 3 days before selling it. Have a tam imaloi, but a tam he's only paying half anyway. Maybe put on him that extra $25. So that's why we need both mishnayos. So you don't have a proof one way or the other from this whether the half that you're paying for when the animal is a tam, whether it's mamon or knas. Proof number two, tashma. The Mishnah continues there in Bava Kamma. Ma ben tam lemuad. What is the difference between a tam and a muad? Shat tam mishalom chatzin nezek migufoy. The tam pays half damages and migufoy. This is what I was mentioning before. That if the live animal, the attacking animal, is worth less than the half damages, then all you do is you pay out of the value of the animal. You don't pay any more than that. The cap, you're paying half the damage or the value of the attacking animal, whichever is less. Migufa, you're only paying out of the body of the animal itself.
So if he's worth $100.
So if the animal's only worth $100, you give him that animal, or you sell the animal and give him $100 or whatever, and that's it. You're not on the hook for the rest. Whereas in the case of a mu'ud, first of all, you pay full damage, and second of all, you pay min ha'aliyah. Min ha'aliyah means from the best. And the pasuk says, metav sadeu, metav, metav kami yishalim, you pay out of the best of your property, which means the Gemara says that if you're paying with land, then you have to pay with the highest quality land that you have. The highest quality of the generally, we talk about three major types of land. There's idis, the best quality, beninus, the average, and zeburis, the worst quality. In the case of nezikin, you pay the best. As opposed to, the Gemara says there, if you're paying with money, or you're paying with movables, then you can pay with anything. Because anything, any movable object is saleable. I think there are some mafarshim who say that, yeah, I mean, aliyah means like money that's stored away in his attic or whatever, yeah. Either way, the point is that, so we have two differences in tam and mu'ud. Number one, half or full, and number two, are you capping it at the value of the animal, or is it the full nezek? Chumash Rashi says, min aliyah means from the attic. Okay. I don't remember, but okay. Anyway. Now, the Mishnah did not mention another difference. According to Rav Huna ben Rabbi Yeshua, if the half damages is a knas, then there should be another difference. Like we said in our Mishnah, you don't pay knas based on your own admission. So therefore, in the case of a tam, if he were to come to Beis Din and admit, my ox killed the other guy's ox, then he wouldn't be chayav, according to Rav Huna, and where according to Rav Papa, he would. And in the case of a mu'ud, he would, because there's paying full damage at that moment, according to everybody.
Right.
So we see that. So the Mishnah is not mentioning that. Obviously, it must be that half damages is considered mammon, like Rav Papa says. The answer is no, not necessarily. You could say Tana v'shayer. The Tana listed some things, and he left out some other things. We say that often. The Tana doesn't have to list every single difference. The famous question, then, in that case, my shayer does.
That he would have said it's impossible.
Yes. The question is, my shire to high shire. In that case, you could say like this. The usual logic that Gemara uses is like this. Yes, if the Tana is listing a list of things in the Mishnah, it doesn't have to be an exhaustive list. But if it's missing one thing, why would he have left out one thing? Obviously, because he disagrees with that. Whereas if he leaves out two or more things, okay, he didn't bother doing the whole list. So if we're saying that he left out this business about being Moida, then we have to say there must be something else missing. What would something else be? My shire to high shire? The answer is shayach chatzi kofer. You could say there's another difference that the Mishnah left out. We said we talked to the Mishnah that if a person's ox kills another person, so the Torah says if the ox is mu'ad, the expression in the Torah is hashor yisakol, the ox gets stoned, which is true whether the ox is a tam or mu'ad, the gamba olaf yumos, also the owner has to be put to death, which really means misbidei shemayim, but then the next part continues, im kofer, yushas olav, if a kofer, a monetary payment, is assessed him, then he has to pay that. Which is not really it's not really an optional thing. It means Beis Din has to assess this kofer and he has to pay that amount. Now, the question is, so in the case of a mu'ad, we're saying he has to pay kofer. And Tosfos points out that the Gemara has a machlokes in Baruch Hamma, what that value of the kofer is. Is it the monetary value of mazik, how much he would be worth as a slave, or is it the value of the nizik, the one who was killed? Which also therefore gets into the question, essentially, is this kofer a monetary payment, a regular monetary payment for damages, or is it a knas? Yeah. Is it called kofer kufra or kofer mamona? Is the kofer basically a kapara for the guy? In that case, it's more of a knas. Or is it mamona? Is it an actual monetary payment for the actual damages? Yeah. As Rashi had said on our Mishnah, that since our Mishnah had said that if a person admits in Beis Din that my ox killed somebody else, that he has to pay the kofer, obviously our Mishnah holds that kofer is mamon. Right. But anyway, going back to the Gemara over here, so the question is, what happens? So we're saying if the Torah says that the ox is mu'ad, then the owner pays full kofer. What about the ox is tam? We said it pays half. We said he pay half damages, and if it killed another animal, what about if it killed a person? Do you pay half the kofer? Let's assume that yes. If that's the case, then that's another difference the Mishnah didn't mention between a tam and a mu'ad. Tam you pay half kofer, mu'ad you pay full kofer. There you go. The Mishnah there now is missing two things. So you could say the Mishnah left out that. The Mishnah therefore also felt it okay to leave out the difference about being moida or not. You're not necessarily that the missionary disagreeing about the concept of it being a class, because you have two things that left out already. So it wasn't an exhaustive. Question is, the Gemara says, no, imishm chatzi kofa lapshi yurah. No, because it's not necessarily, because if all you're saying, if the only other thing the Mishnah is leaving out is the chatzi kofa, not necessarily is that considered leaving something out, because that's actually a machloka. Hamani Rabbi Yosi Aglivi, because you could say that that Mishnah is, according to Rabbi Yosi Aglivi, from Tam Mishalem chatzi kofa, who says that yes, a Tam does pay half kofa. Yeah, meaning in other words, that so, in other words, like this, we were assuming that let's go back a little bit to based on Rashi over here. The verse is like this: the Torah says, in the case of a tam, the Torah says, if a tam kills a person, we say the ox has to be killed, sakur yisakur lasher. But it says uval asher naki, the owner of the ox is clean. The simple meaning of it means, in other words, he's exempt from any further penalty. But if it's a mu'ad, then he said, Megamba all of Yomos, that the owner is supposed to get Misavide Shemayim, and instead he redeems himself with kofar. Now, the question is, what does it mean, Ubala Shonoki? Does it mean, the Chachamim take it to mean that indeed, in the case of a tam, he does not pay anything? The ox gets stoned, but the owner is free from any further payment. On the other hand, Rabbi Yosi Agbuli takes it to mean that no, the Pasuk Ubala Shonoki is not teaching us that in the case of a tam, the owner is exempt from payment. He does, in fact, have to pay half kofar. But what is the pasuk teaching us that suppose a few pesukim earlier the Torah talks about something we talked about the other day, the case where two people are fighting and one of them hits a pregnant woman and causes her to miscarry, we said he has to pay. Uvala Shonoki, according to Rabbi Yosi Aglivi, is teaching us that if the same thing happens with an ox, if the ox strikes a pregnant woman and makes her miscarry, then the owner is pater from paying for the value of the baby. As opposed to a person who would be chayiv, and as opposed to the matter of kofar or not. So according to him, yes, you do owe chatzi kofar. So what's the thing? If we say that the Mishnah is according to the Chachamim, then you have, there's another difference between tam and muad, namely that a tam, in the case of a tam, you're not paying kofar, and in the case of muad, you're paying kofar. But if you say that, and then you have that. That's one difference that the Mishnah left out. And then another difference could be the difference whether you pay the half damages if you admit it and base it or not. But the other way we could take it is maybe the Mishnah goes according to Rabbi Yosi Aglivi. According to Rabbi Yosi Aglivi, you do in fact pay half kofar for a tam. So then that's not really a difference in tam and more. The fact that you pay half versus a whole, that's not really considered another difference because you already mentioned you pay half versus a whole. So then you'd only have one difference left. And again, one difference, the Mishnah doesn't leave out. So the point is, the Gemara is mentioning this in order to say that we can understand the Mishnah according to either opinion. We can understand the Mishnah, we can say in other words like this, according to the Papa, the Mishnah is not leaving out anything. The Mishnah hasn't left out the business about if you're Moida, because according to the Papa, if you're Moida, you still do pay. It's Mamon. The Mishnah is also not leaving out the matter of Kofar. If it's going like Rabbi Yosi Aglivi, then there's Kofar either way. Versus a coin to Rabbi Hunan, Rabbi Yeshua, we would say the Mishnah is leaving out two things. The fact that if you admit, he would say that the Mishnah is a coin to the Chachamim, right? So number one, the Mishnah is leaving out the fact that if you're Moida, you don't pay, because it's not. And number two, that you don't pay a kofar for a tam. You don't pay half a kofar according to the Chachamim. That's the thing. So playing according to Rabbi Hunan, Rabbi Yeshua's understanding, the Mishnah is not mentioning about admission what happens if you admit, because the Mishnah also left out something else. Not that it disagrees with it, but just the Mishnah didn't give an exhaustive list. As opposed to, according to the Papa, the Mishnah's list is exhaustive. Those are all the differences in time and mord. Half versus whole, and migufo yo min haliyah, the fact that you also pay half a kofar is included in the fact that you're paying half damages. Next, Toshma, come, let's try to bring another proof. A Mishnah says in Baba Kama, Hamis Shodius Plani, our Mishnah rather, Hamis Shodius Plani, or Shodish Plani, if somebody comes to Beis Din and admits, my ox killed so and so, or so and so's ox, how does he mishalem up the atzma? Then he has to pay based on his own admission. My lot the tam. On the face of it, wouldn't our Mishnah be talking about a tam? Now, if Chatzi Nezek is Mamon, then fine. Of course, you pay Mamon based on your own admission. But if it's Knaf, that's what Punavir Yavi Shur says, and how does that work? Into his law, the Muad. Not necessarily our mission. Could be talking about a Muad. We're Muad. We pay the whole damages. Of course, that's Mamon. Question is, what? So what are you telling me? If the animal is a Tam, then you wouldn't pay based on your own admission because it's Knaf? then at the Tony Sefer, then why does the Mishnah, at the end of the Mishnah, move on to a different case, which is Avdish or Plaini, Enim Shalom Apiyatsme, where it says that if the person admits in Beis Din that my ox killed somebody else's Eved, where the 30 Shkolim is certainly a knaf, then you don't pay on your own admission. Why bring in a new case? Niflig ben Nifni v'nidah. Why doesn't the Mishnah instead go continuing in the same topic? You're admitting that your ox killed somebody else, but within that itself, there's a difference whether it's a mord. A medra a mord. When would that be talking about that you pay based on your own admission if the animal's a mord? Well, then you pay mine. Al tam any mishalom up yatmai. But tam, you're not paying on your own admission because that's a knaf. The answer is called a mord, Kamayri, because you could say that the whole Mishnah is talking about a mord. That even within a mord itself, you have to, even within mord itself, the Mishnah doesn't want to tell us that there's a difference between tam and mord. The Mishnah wants to point out that even within mord itself, you have a difference between whether it killed another regular person, where then it's mamon, versus when it killed an eved, where then it's knaf. Which Rashi points out, the point is that if you were to say, either way, in other words, you're arguing why is the Mishnah switching from a regular person to an Eved? The answer is that if you were going from Tam to Mord, you would also be switching. So therefore, as long as the Mishnah has to switch, then it may as well switch this and teach us within Mord itself the difference. Tashma, come, let's bring another proof from the end of our Mishnah. Zakwa, we say this is the general rule. Kol mashalim yatsa amashe hizik. Anybody who pays more than the amount he damaged, any mashalim apiyasmid. He doesn't pay based on his own admission, which would seem to imply a pachas amashe hizik. But if he's paying less, mashalim apiyasmid, then he does pay based on his own admission. Chasi nezik, by definition, you're paying less than what you damaged. So it would seem that the Mishnah is not including that in its rule. You do pay even if you yourself admitted it based in, which means that it's mamon, not knas. No, not necessarily is that the influence the Mishnah is trying to teach you, that there's a difference between more and less. No, you can say that the Mishnah is just telling us a distinction. If you pay exactly the amount you damage, then you do pay based on your own admission. But if it's more, and by implication, less, then it is a knas. Then it's a knas, and you know. Question is, the inference from the Mishnah would be that the Mishnah is telling us if you pay more, then it's knas. If you pay the exact amount of damage, then it's not knas, it's mamon. Less than that, we're not talking about. The Mishnah is not addressing the question. The Mishnah is not addressing the question of less. So then the question is, so what's the implication then? You would say that if it's less, then it's considered knas, and you're not paying on its own? Instead of saying that if you pay more, let the Mishnah just say outright, if you're paying differently than the amount you damage, either more or less, then you don't pay based on yourself. Which would imply just as well more or less. And then the Mishnah doesn't have to use any extra words for that or anything. It makes things clearer. So the Gemara says, yes, that in fact seems to be a clear contradiction to the Ravuna b'Rabbi Yeshua. However, but the halacha is kagan is knasa, but the half damage is considered knas, like Ravona Bered Rav Yeshua. What, you just slugged him up based on the words of the Mishnah, but you're saying the halacha is like it? The answer is ain't. Yes, because time of my itosa, what's the logic you're using to slug him up? You said Mishum like a ton of kimasha hizik, because just because the Mishnah didn't use the word exactly as much as he damaged, which left open the implication of what happened to the blessed. The reason is like psikale. The reason why the Mishnah didn't do that, the reason why the Mishnah specifically mentioned more, is because when it comes to less, it's not necessarily a definitive thing. Given the ikka chati nezik tsrevirus, because we have one other case where you pay half damages. The Gemara discusses in Baba Kama in the second paragraph, where you pay less. Yeah. Namely, the Gemara discusses in Baba Kama as follows, second paragraph of Baba Kama. We mentioned before at the beginning that if an animal steps on something and breaks it, that's a normal kind of damage, and you pay full damages. You should expect your animal to step wherever it wants, and you need to be careful. What happens if instead of the animal directly stepping on something and breaking it, it's walking down the street, it's stepping on pebbles, on gravel or whatever, and a piece of gravel shoots out from under its foot and knocks into something and breaks it? That's called tsroiris. That's called damage by pebbles. And now, we have halacha l'moshe mi Sinai that even though you're only paying half damages, because it's not considered a normal kind of damage, yet that's considered mauling. We don't say, unlike what we said before about Teren, that's considered a very unusual thing, and therefore we have the machloekes, is it that the Torah is being made for the mocking on you? Chassi nezek tzeres, we know it's halacha Moshe Mitzinai, that it's mammon, and the Torah is being makel on you.
Even if unusual.
It's somewhat unusual. It's not as unusual as Karen. But, yeah. So there you have a case where you're paying less, but yet it's mammon. So if a person were to come to Beis Din and admit, my animal was walking down the street and it kicked up pebbles and they broke something, you would have to pay. Mishamacha, like Katani. So that's why the Mishnah couldn't use the expression where you're paying differently than a different amount than the amount of a hezek. Because there you have a case where you're paying less. So all the Mishnah could mention, if you're paying more, that's always knas. If you're paying less, sometimes it's knas, sometimes it's mammon.
But the Mishnah could have said you pay exactly when it's not exactly the amount, except for this case.
But the Mishnah doesn't have to go into that level of detail. Yeah. So the Mishnah is just telling us a general rule. If you're paying more, then it's knas. By implication, if you're paying an exact the same as you damage, then it's not knas, it's mammon. If you're paying less, the Mishnah is not implying anything. Sometimes it's knas, sometimes it's mammon. And therefore, so we can say, in the case of Keren, in the case of goring, it's considered knas, like the one of Rabbi Yeshua. In the case of tzoras, damaged by pebbles, then it's considered mammon. Yeah. Allah HaMashem is saying. Okay. So the Gemara points out, V'hashta de'amet palgan is k'knasa. Okay, so now let's figure out the implications. If we're saying that chatzi nezek for goring is considered knas, then, now, teren doesn't just include goring, it includes any kind of damage which is unusual for an animal to do. The Gemara brings examples in Baba Kama, for example, if the animal kicks. It's not normal for an animal to kick things and break them. It's normal for it to walk and break things. If an animal bites, there's a few different cases. So here's some more. Hai kalba da'achal imri, if a dog eats lambs, v'shunra da'achal tanagoli ravravi, or a cat eats large chickens. Mefarshim discussed over here, does the word large refer to both of them? Rashi discusses in Baba Kama, he says that the word large over here refers to both. So a dog might normally eat small lambs, but not necessarily, but not large ones. A cat might eat small chickens, but not large ones. The Rabbi Ravi, in other words, the coin of Rashi goes on both. According to the Rambam, it only goes on the chicken. According to the Rambam, a dog doesn't normally eat sheep, large or small. But a cat might well eat small chickens, but not large ones. Mishunu, this is considered an unusual kind of damage. It's not normal for the animal to do that. V'loy magbin in Bababel. Therefore, in Babel, where we don't have dayanim that have smicha, the smicha can only be given in Eretz Yisrael. The smicha, we're talking the smicha ish matiyish from Moshe Rabbeinu, can only be given in Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, the dayanim can't make him pay that in Babel. Avol zutri urchehu, but if it eats small ones, then that's normal for the animal. Or magbin, and then basin can collect it. Right, because then it would be nezek tofas, because then that's normal damage, yeah. The itofas, however, if the nizek goes and grabs property of the mazik to pay for the damage, lemapkinin mine, then we don't have the ability to take it away from him. So Tosfos discusses the idea that
take it away, in other words.
So Tosfos says that we don't mean stam if the nizek goes and just and grabs the guy's wallet and then says I'm holding on to it until you pay me. We can't do that because who says the wallet has the right amount in it? And if you're going to take away some of that and leave him the rest, then effectively in bubble you're collecting a knas, and you can't do that. Rather, Tosfos says what we mean over here is if the nizik grabs the actual animal that caused the damage and says I'm keeping this in payment of the damages, that you don't have the ability to take away from him
because it's bubble.
If it was an Eretz Yisrael, you would say you can actually go to Beis Din and they deal with the knas matter. Since it's a bubble, you can't deal with knasim. But we're saying the guy has the option at least to grab a hold of the animal that caused the hezek, or according to other rishonim of any property of the mazik, and collect based on that. So Tosfos says, the Rabbeinu Tam says, and Tosfos, the reason is because when it comes to the mazik itself, when it comes to the actual animal that caused the damage, the chama being makel on him and saying you're going to at least allow him to get relief that way by grabbing the animal.
If it's worth much more?
What? If it's worth much more, then we'll have to deal with it. But otherwise, Tosfos says, I mean, otherwise he could grab everything that belongs to the guy. Yeah. Tosfos Rid says differently. Tosfos Rid over here just says that he can grab property that belongs to the Mazik, just generically property. So, the E-Omar. Now, what happens if the Nizik says, you know what, fine, I'm not going to be Tosfos, but I still want redress. Equally Zimna La'Eretz Yisrael. Set up for me an appointment at the Beis Din in Eretz Yisrael. You bet, but Beis Din in Bavel, force the guy who caused the hezek to go with me to Eretz Yisrael, and we'll go to a Beis Din who has smicha over there. McBannon, like, then we set up such a time. We tell the mazik is going to have to do that. The Eloi also Masham Sinan, like, and if he doesn't go, then we put him in Cherem. Actually, so that obviously is not an effect when there's no base in Smuchin and Eretz Yisrael. However, Tosfos Rid quotes, and the Rambam also mentions it in a few places, that in the times of the Gaonim, since already they didn't have smicha anymore in any place, and the guy is not going to have any redress that way, they made a takana that they'll put the mazik in cheirim until he gives the guy some kind of compensation. He has to at least be willing to compensate him to some extent. And then we'll take.
They don't have the capacity to do chayim,
but they have the capacity to put him in chayim and force him to do the right thing. Ben kach meshamtinin lay. And actually, either way, we put the mazik in chayim. Damrinin lay slik hazekah, because we tell him get rid of the damaging thing. You have a dangerous animal over there. You have a dangerous dog or cat or what have you. Get rid of it. And until you do, we're putting you in chayim. Midr of Nassim. We learn this based on what Rav Nassim says. The Tanya of Nassim. Minayin shle yigad aladam kelav rabba seichbe. Say, how do we know a person should not raise a dangerous dog in his house? Well, yamad sulamra or beseichbe. So he shouldn't leave a shaky ladder in his house. And Marsha points out in Bava Kamma, again, we have this whole Gemara in Bava Kamma, Marsha points out the point of beseichbe. So is even if you're talking about the people in the household know already that it's a dangerous dog or a dangerous ladder or whatever, and they know to stay away from it, still don't keep it around. Because not just the people. They don't necessarily have the right to go into his house and take it away, but they have the right to put him in chayim until he gets rid of it. And so the point is, even the people in the house know to be careful, but other people may not know. Shenema, because the pasuk says, "Well, toss in dummy b'vesecha." Don't put blood in your house. Somebody's going to come in, and in particular with a dog. The Gemara mentions in Bava Kamma that a dangerous dog like that is likely to bark and scare a pregnant woman and cause her to miscarry. So, therefore, the owner has a responsibility to get rid of these kinds of dangerous animals.
You read up a different, what would be a dangerous dog category?
Well, an example is over here already, where it's eating, where it's killing and eating large animals that it wouldn't normally, according to the Rambam, even small animals or whatever that it wouldn't normally eat. But also, there's in that case in Bava Kamma, for example, where the animal where the dog barks loudly and scares a woman and causes her to miscarry. Any of these kinds of things.
Everywhere you go.
Well, then that would be a kelavra. The truth is, the Gemara does discuss in Bava Kamma at the end of Perek Merubah over there. The Gemara discusses over there that there are certain cases. If you're living out in the countryside, then you can have a dog for protection. You have to keep it chained up during the day. You let it roam around free at night. There are situations, but you have to make sure that it's not a dangerous one. That it's not dangerous to people. Hadron alachelu nairis.
I mean,
if it's the same, yeah, but on the contrary, if it's the same space, people are going to come in and get bitten or scared or whatever by it.
No, you walk into it. Happened to me once. I walked into a home. This tiny, tiny, tiny dog came to me and bit me.
I don't think those kind of tiny dogs are necessarily considered kelebra, but yeah. Those kind of bigger danger is more that you'll step on them and trip over them when you're walking in.